thank you to our Patreon listeners. If you haven't yet become a Patreon supporter, go to patreon.com/thechildrenshour.
What was the first animal in space?
I don't know. What?
The cow that jumped over the moon. It's time for them for the Children's Hour. Kids Public Radio.
If I could see Earth from outer space, through all of the stars, to the human race, to all of the people and the streets that I once knew. If I could see Earth from outer space, through all of the stars, to the human race, no matter where I go, I still come back to you. If I could fly, 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 so high, so high, higher than the clouds, even higher than the sky.
That was Michael Franti, Earth from Outer Space. Today on the Children's Hour, we are going out of this world, literally. The Children's Hour and the University of New Mexico co-hosted a live chat with NASA astronaut Christina Cook on the International Space Station. During the event, we spoke with space researchers who are part of the many scientists who are working towards life in space and on other planets. We'll join the show on stage at the University of New Mexico's Student Union Building with more than 600 students in the audience.
I am Katie Stone, and I'm up here with many of the kids in our crew, including...
Hi, this is Octavia.
Hi, this is Ben.
I am Oscar.
Hi, I'm Siobhan.
Hi, I'm Kaya.
Hi, it's Lucas.
Hi, I'm Liliana.
Hello, this is Julia.
Hi, I'm Leela.
Hi, I'm Samuel.
Hi, I'm Liam.
Hi, I'm Eli.
Hi, I'm Ellie.
Hello, it's Zen.
Hello, I'm Amadeus.
Hi, I'm Evan.
Hi, it's Mile.
Hello, it's Annabella.
Hi, it's Ava.
Happy day, it's Maya.
Yellow, it's Haley.
Hi, I'm Sienna.
Hi, it's Maggie.
Let's hear for our crew. I want to give a special shout out to one person who really made this entire day possible, Dr. David Hansen. He's from the UNM Department of Biology. He's back there. He's a little shy. Dr. Hansen had a plant experiment aboard the space station, and that's what inspired him to create this day for us all. Dr. David Hansen conducted his experiment aboard the International Space Station last year. His experiment involved photosynthesis. The very first question is...
What is photosynthesis?
Well, good question. I wish I knew. No. Photosynthesis is the process where plants absorb light as the energy from light, split water, and also fix carbon dioxide to build all the sugars that make all of the plant bodies that then we eat and make all of our bodies.
Can photosynthesis happen on the space station?
Yes, it can. Our experiment was the first experiment ever to measure the light part of photosynthesis occurring on the space station. And then we've had others in the past for a long time that have been doing the CO2 part. But if you don't have a fan up there to mix the CO2 around, the plants will die.
Did you know that before you had plants aboard the International Space Station trying to understand photosynthesis?
Nope. I hadn't been thinking about stuff in space at all before I sort of was invited to work on a proposal with Washington State University.
How did you start researching photosynthesis?
I started researching in graduate school, actually. As an undergraduate, I learned about photosynthesis in a class and thought it would be kind of important and fun to think about. And then I started writing around looking to see who does it, because I wanted to learn more about it. And I thought everything was known, and boy, was I wrong.
What do you hope to accomplish with your research on photosynthesis?
Well, that's a big question. Really, we want to help understand how things are surviving in different environments and use that knowledge to help improve human lives through improving agriculture and also just making sure we have a wonderful environment out there.
So photosynthesis can occur even with non-natural light. Does it just need light? It doesn't need sunshine?
Right, any light that we can see, plants can use for photosynthesis, which is really kind of cool.
So are you hoping that your research enables the space station to grow even more plants, like trees and things like that, aboard the space station to produce their own oxygen?
Yeah, I'd love it. We'd love to see more and more plants growing on the space station, on the moon, on Mars, wherever.
Let's give it up for Dr. David Hansen. From the University of New Mexico Biology Department, the reason you're here today.
Oh, we were gonna get an RV just to see a bit of the country, ride around to and fro anywhere we wanna go and always have somewhere to stay. But then we started thinking it through. What if we wanna go to Hawaii? You can't drive to Amsterdam, Vietnam, or Pakistan. I guess we're gonna need a jet plane. But what if we wanna go to the moon? Or fly around Alpha Centauri? The ultimate vacation vehicle for recreation. And there's nowhere in the world we can't fly in our custom family spaceship flying motel in the sky. Shine up the hubcaps, fill up the tanks with oxygen and hydrogen and change the oil, thanks. We're headed off to Neptune, we'll be there in a snap. We'll make the jump to hyperspace while baby takes a nap. We don't stop for anything, we've got our own supply in our custom family spaceship flying motel in the sky. Hey, is that Jupiter over on the right? Who knows how many moons it has?
63.
That's right. Look, the one with rings.
Saturn.
You bet. Who knows why they stay in place?
Gravity, Dad, are we there yet?
Yes, we're on vacation, the astronauts and I, in our custom family spaceship flying motel in the sky. Everyone's exhausted, Neptune was a blast, but now it's time to brush our teeth and go to bed at last. Mama draws the curtains and gives a kiss goodnight, while I go round to strap 'em down so all the kids sleep tight. Out here the rules of gravity, they just don't apply in our custom family spaceship flying motel in the sky. Just don't roll down the windows unless this is goodbye. In our custom family spaceship flying motel in the sky.
Custom Family Spaceship is David Tabachman from a CD called Escalator, released in 2012. This is the Children's Hour. I'm Katie Stone. The Children's Hour Kids crew and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to co-host a live interview with NASA astronaut Christina Cook on the space station. The event was organized by the University of New Mexico Biology Department because New Mexico has long been a hub of space research. While we were waiting for our call from NASA, the more than 600 kids in the audience got to hear from Kurt Loyt from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. He is a software engineer with two kids, and he lives on what's called the Space Coast. Kurt works on exploration research, and he is one of the people preparing the way for humans to live on Mars. Please welcome Kurt Loyt. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here. Look at this huge crowd, and they keep filling in.
So tell us a little bit about your research, what you're working on.
I work in a group at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida who are thinking far, far out in the future. A lot of folks at NASA are working on the current rocket or the current spacecraft, but there are several groups at NASA who are not focusing on the current missions. They're focusing on what what machines, what facilities, what robots, what technologies are we going to need really far in the future? For example, when we have colonists living on the moon, when we have colonists living on Mars.
Well, this brings us right away to our very first question, Octavia.
Malcolm Boyce, fifth grader at Bandelier Elementary School, asks, when will NASA return to the moon?
That is a really good question. NASA, a lot of people in the general public don't realize that NASA is working on going back to the moon right now. And a lot of the general public finds that out by people like myself, NASA employees, going out and talking to the community and talking to the students and explaining what NASA is doing. And NASA has been charged by our president and our vice president to go back to the moon by the year 2024. And last I looked at my calendar, 2024 is about 5 years away. And that's going to be here very soon. But we're going to use existing technology as much as we can. And we're going to launch a sort of a small space station, but it's not anything like the space station that's around the Earth. We're going to launch a spacecraft, and it's going to be launched to an orbit around the moon, and that will be an outpost around the moon that we can use for our astronauts to stay in and then get in their spacecraft that goes down to the moon. This time, when we go back to the moon, we're going to go to the poles of the moon rather than the equator of the moon. And there's some interesting science that can be done at the poles. There is water, frozen water, in the permanently shadowed craters of the poles at the moon. And so we're going to be able to do some really great science, really great exploration. And this time when we go back to the moon, we're going to go there to stay. We're going to do it in a sustained manner so that we can stay there for long periods of time and live off the land as much as possible. And so these technologies for living off the land are what NASA folks are working on right now.
Goman Thabouth, a fifth grader at Bandelier Elementary School, asked, when do you think we will get to Mars?
That is a great question, because after we have a sustained presence on the moon and we're able to live there for long periods of time and live off the land, the next logical step, in my mind, is to go live on Mars, send human missions to Mars, and be able to live off the land on Mars. And it turns out that a lot of the technologies we'll need to live off the land on the moon will also work on Mars. The environments are similar in a lot of different ways. If we're going to be going back to the moon in the mid-2020s, I expect we'll probably be going to Mars in the 2030s, maybe the 2040s, but that's yet to be seen. There's a lot of time between now and then to figure that out. Good question.
Can we terraform Mars before it's too late?
That's a really good question. There are some scientists around the world right now who are thinking about ways that we can terraform Mars and a way to create an atmosphere on Mars so that we will be able to live and breathe on Mars, breathing the atmosphere on Mars. That problem has not been solved, but there are a lot of people working on it, and hopefully we'll be able to do it. It will probably take a really long time to create an oxygen atmosphere on Mars, because right now Mars doesn't have a lot of oxygen in its atmosphere. But hopefully we'll get there someday if we're patient. A lot of the students in this room are probably the age where they might be working on that problem when they're my age. So they can start thinking about that right now.
Well, I have a question for you. In these plans to go live on Mars and live on the moon, is there a plan to allow those people to ever come home?
Oh, definitely. NASA does not plan any one-way missions. We always bring our astronauts back. There are some private companies, however, planning for one-way missions. That has nothing to do with NASA and the U.S. government. Yeah, we always bring our astronauts back. So how long our first lunar missions are going to be are probably going to be very short, because the technology that we're using is new technology. But that's going to evolve over time, and we'll be sending our astronauts for longer and longer missions on the moon and then eventually to Mars. When they go to Mars, our astronauts are going to be living on the surface of Mars for about a year and a half. Plus, there's a six-month trip there and a six-month trip home. So Mars missions far, far in the future are going to be really, really long missions. And we're going to have to do a lot of work to get our technology up to the point where we'll be able to be ready for a mission like that.
Do you test what you do somewhere on Earth before it goes into space so that you know it works in space? And how do you do that?
Everything that NASA launches off of the planet gets tested a lot on Earth in environments that try to simulate or emulate the environment that it's going to actually see while it's on its mission. So, for example, we have some drop towers where we can drop experiments and they feel a weightlessness for just a few seconds. We also have airplanes that fly in a parabolic arc, and an experiment on that sort of an airplane can experience near zero gravity for 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute or so. And then if your experiment needs a lot more weightlessness than that, then you can actually send it all the way to the space station, and our astronauts on the space station can run your experiments on the space station for days or weeks or months. And so we have different facilities here on Earth and in low Earth orbit that we can use to test our technologies on before we send them out into outer space.
Kurt Loyt from the Kennedy Space Center, please give him a big thank you for being with us today. Thank you, Kurt. The Children's Hour is listener-supported kids' public radio produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a nonprofit dedicated to producing high-quality kids' public radio. Learn more at childrenshour.org. Meow Wolf is a proud supporter of the Children's Hour. Meow Wolf creates immersive experiences that transport audiences of all ages into kaleidoscopic realms of story and exploration. Learn more at meowwolf.com.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Tastes Like Space is Secret Agent 23 Skidoo from a CD called Lucktricity. This is the Children's Hour. We were live in front of an audience of more than 600 students gathered to hear an interview with Christina Cook, astronaut aboard the International Space Station. And suddenly...
Station, this is Houston. Are you ready for the event?
Houston, station is ready.
University of New Mexico, this is Mission Control Houston. Please call station for a voice check.
Station, this is University of New Mexico. How do you hear me?
Hello to the University of New Mexico. The International Space Station has you loud and clear.
Hello, Christina. We have over 600 students here at the University of New Mexico and more online. Our co-host will also broadcast nationwide on the Children's Hour radio show. We have some great questions for you, and we hope our samples from the first advanced plant habitat experiment are still frozen up there.
Welcome on board to all 600 of you and everyone else who's watching. Yes, I think your samples are somewhere on board in one of our freezers, and I'm looking forward to your great questions today.
Hi, I'm Maya Falcon, and I'm a sixth grader at Bosque School. We are here because of work by UNM biologists in the advanced plant habitat. What plant experiments are you doing in space right now?
Well, I tell you what, we actually just finished up a round of three different harvests on our recent garden in space. We grew Mizuno lettuce plants, and we got to eat them here on board, half of the harvest anyway. The other half we're going to send down to the ground so that the scientists can continue their evaluation. But right here, you can actually see the facility where the plants were growing. It's like a little mini greenhouse built into an electronics and scientific experiment locker, as we call it here in space. And I also have something to show you, which is how we physically grow the plants. So this is what we call a plant pillow. And it encased in it is the soil equivalent that has all the nutrients and fertilizers that we're evaluating in this experimental facility. We also have a really unique way of watering these plants. We do it through a tube, and that's because obviously we can't just pour water onto the plants like you can in gravity. And we have to have a special way to keep the water away from the roots so that they don't actually completely encapsulate the roots and prevent the roots from doing what they need to do. So that was an exciting experiment. Now, one thing that it differs from the advanced plant habitat facility that I think your biology department used was it sounded like yours was a much more automated system, whereas the veggie system that we used more recently was very crew intensive. We were involved in physically watering the plants, monitoring the plants, harvesting, trimming, and taking stock of how healthy they were doing, whether they needed more or less water, just by observing. And we did that with help with the ground, whereas we weren't fully instrumented and automated like some other facilities. So there's kind of two different ways to do that and to take on that challenge of growing food in space.
Hello, I'm Julia Wolf, a 14-year-old. When astronauts were working on UNM plant experiments in the advanced plant habitat, they seemed to be very happy. Do you think plants are more important for nutrition or psychological benefits?
You know what? I am absolutely sure that they were very happy working on your plants because I know how much I enjoyed working on the plants during my mission. And I can tell you, I don't think it's possible to pick just one. I think the value of growing things in orbit is both psychological and, you know, for food and nourishment. I think we get a lot out of seeing something grow and a reminder of Earth, and even just the smell of the plants can be something so unique up here and something to all take pride in, to enjoy together. So, you know, seeing the plants grow, being a part of it, creating something, but also the crew aspect, getting together for a unique meal, getting to eat the salad and things like that is another aspect of how wonderful it is. So there's just not enough good I can say about it, and we're so grateful that programs like yours get to participate and sort of move that science on the frontiers border forward and forward as we learn how we can be more sustainable for long-duration spaceflight missions.
Have you ever tried a New Mexico chili, and will you be able to roast chilies on the space station?
Luckily for me, I have tried a New Mexico chili, and they're awesome. The chili sauces there are second to none for sure. In fact, a little story about that. I was trying to think when was the last time I had a New Mexico chili, and it reminded me of a great memory when I first got the job as an astronaut. I actually had to take a road trip all the way from where I was living in Montana down to Houston, and sure enough, I have some friends that live in Santa Fe, and I stopped in to see them, and we all went out for some authentic New Mexican food, and of course that included chili sauce. So I was just recently emailing with those friends, and they asked me that very same question, if we have chilies on board, and I said, you have no idea how much I wish we did, because they are wonderful and I sure do miss that. In terms of roasting them, I'm not sure. We do actually have the chance to roast garlic here sometimes. We have a little space oven. It doesn't get very hot, but if you put some things in there and you wrap them up real tight, you can cook them for long enough that you can get that kind of roasted feel. So, hey, I'm willing to try. I wish I was going to be here for it.
What's the best way to describe microgravity? Is it as fun as we imagine?
I think the best way to describe it is that what it means is that you and all of your surroundings are in free fall. So what it appears as if everything just floats in place, but really you're all just accelerating and free falling around the Earth. So we are experiencing the Earth's gravity. In fact, we're actually experiencing about 90% of what you all experience on the surface of the Earth. The difference is we're just moving so fast that as we fall, we actually fall around the Earth. Earth, and that defines orbit. So microgravity means we're not, you know, it's not the absence of mass, which of course creates gravity, but all the objects together are in the same gravitational field and all falling together. So yes, it is a lot of fun. Floating around, of course, is one of the exciting parts of being up here on board and being an astronaut. There are things about it that make life hard, though. Obviously, when you lose something, it can go floating away in any direction. So, you know, if you lose your keys on Earth, you'll lose stuff up here even more often. I've proved that to be true. But it will take that, you know, obviously it lends itself to sort of a fun life up here. But even more importantly, it lends itself to all the amazing experiments that we can do on board that take advantage of that microgravity environment to do things that we can't do on Earth, but that can benefit life back on Earth.
I'm Leela, a 14-year-old from Albuquerque, New Mexico. How do you keep track of time on the space station?
Well, it's interesting because we do have 16 sunrises and sunsets every day. And that's because we orbit around the Earth about every hour and a half. So as you can imagine, we can't keep track of time just kind of by keeping track of whether or not it's night or day. But luckily the ground, our ground centers in Houston, our teams on the ground that keep us busy all day, they make sure that we don't lose track of time because we have a schedule that actually keeps us doing different tasks down to the 5-minute increment. So we pick an arbitrary time to follow on the Earth. So we could really pick any time zone because we're obviously orbiting around the Earth up above all the time zones. But we pick one that is a good sort of halfway point between all of the different centers on the Earth that we work with. So we work on a daily basis with grounds teams in Moscow, Houston, Japan, Europe. And so we actually pick what's called Greenwich Mean Time, which is a time in sort of the Central European area. And that is what we call our regular time. We're about probably 7 hours ahead of you guys out there in New Mexico. But like I said, the ground team keeps us nice and busy, so we don't have the luxury of losing track of time.
I'm Ava, and I'm 9 years old.
I'm Maya, and I'm 7 years old.
How do you sleep?
Is a space station crew member always awake?
Great questions. The first one, how do we sleep? So interestingly, we use a sleeping bag similar to what you might use when you go camping, except we can put it on any surface. So I can sleep what you might think of as standing up, or I could sleep on the ceiling. And in fact, my bedroom in space is actually in the ceiling. But once we're zipped up inside our sleeping bag, which actually has holes so that our arms can float like this, all you have to do is just close your eyes and you fall asleep. It's actually very comfortable sleeping. I sleep great up here. No hot spots, you know, no covers getting in the way. It's just extremely comfortable. Now, we do not run 24-hour operations here where we have someone awake at all times. During the night, we all the astronauts on board, all six of us, get to sleep at the same time, and we count on our ground teams to keep an eye on things and all the systems on board, and they would wake us up with an audio call, or the station's self-monitoring system would wake us up with an alarm if there was something that needed attention. So luckily, we get to sleep all together, and that kind of keeps us all in sync.
Hi, I'm Haley Peterson, and a seventh grader. What is your daily routine?
Our daily routine is a lot like many on the ground. Get up, you know, have some breakfast, get yourself ready, maybe say hi to your crewmates. Our commute is a little different, though. There's no cars. We just basically get to float on over to the next module over, and then suddenly we're already at our jobs. Work throughout the day, little lunch break, and then in the evenings after work, we usually have time for a little free time, a little time to spend together and call home, call our families. So it's a pretty standard day like you might think of at home, just like your parents do, going to work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, and I am 12 years old.
Hi, I'm Eli, I'm 10 years old.
I was wondering, how differently does food taste in space?
And is the food you eat different than what you would eat on Earth?
Wow, what great questions. So first of all, the food is different, but I don't think it tastes that different. For the most part, I would say that we taste about the same. There are some changes you could say. I would say up here, people tend to like spicier foods. But in general, I like the same foods up here that I like at home. So speaking of some of those foods, I brought a couple to show you. So all of our food comes in packets, as you can see here, and it's either dehydrated or it's kind of like an MRE style where it's been what they call thermostabilized. So it can live in this packet for a long time and be opened and eaten at any time. Now my favorite one to show people is the dehydrated space hamburger. So yes, we have burgers in space, but not what you might be used to. If we open this package up, you can see a dehydrated space burger. So what we would do is we would hook this packet up to a little water dispenser, fill it with hot water, and allow it to rehydrate for a little while. And then, you know, add your regular burger toppings, and there you go. So I actually think that cooking in space is really nice because the preparation is pretty quick.
Hi, I'm Ellie, and I'm 11. We have many people who jump rope in the audience. Can you break the current world record of a set tuple under? 7 rope revolutions in 1 jump on the space station?
Wow, a septuple under. I am so glad you explained what that was, because I can't even fathom someone doing that in Earth, much less up here. I do a little tiny bit of jump roping with my sister sometimes, but we don't have a lot of room for that here. So though I would love to take on your challenge, I'm a little bit afraid of what I might break in the process, not only on the space station, but maybe even on myself. So I'm gonna say that we probably could, mainly just because to jump, I can stay in the air for a pretty long time. But these experiments around here aren't exactly made for jump roping, sadly.
Hi, I'm Sienna, a 7th grader at the Public Academy for Performing Arts. What did it feel like when you were outside the station for the first all-woman spacewalk?
Well, the opportunity to do a spacewalk is one of the most exceptional things I've ever had the honor to do and the privilege to do. And they are all really exciting and offer you amazing views of Earth. They offer you, you know, this professional opportunity to give back to the program by repairing or upgrading something on the outside of space station. So it's really an amazing feeling. That spacewalk where Jessica and I got to do the first one as the all-female spacewalk was especially important to me, and I think to her as well, because we had, you know, spent our whole lives being inspired by people who showed us what it was like to pursue your dreams, and then to be out there and to know that we were able to give back and to perhaps provide that inspiration for people on the ground, that to me was just the most amazing feeling that I had during the spacewalk.
Hi, I'm Zen Menendez. How do you spend your free time on the space station? And how much free time do you have?
Yes, we do have some free time. Typically on the weekends after work, we don't have a ton of time because we do have 12-hour work days. But when we have the time, my favorite thing to do is photography. We have a beautiful window that looks down on the Earth, and I call it the bay window of space station, but it's a module called the cupola. And from there, you can just see absolutely phenomenal views as we orbit the planet. And this is an 800 millimeter lens that I like to use to capture scenes and different phenomenon on the Earth. So I'm a big fan of photography up here. I also like night photography. When we're not doing stuff like that, we like to hang out together, maybe do some group meals, call home, chat with our friends and family that are home, and, you know, maybe watch movies, stuff like that, when we just need a little downtime and some recharge time. I also like to read, so there's plenty to do up here, and I'm sure we could fill a lot more free time if we had it.
Thank you so much, Christina Cook, aboard the International Space Station, here talking with all of these students at the University of New Mexico.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure to be with you.
Houston, this is Houston ACR. That concludes our event as we count down to 20 continuous years of humans living and working on the International Space Station.
Thank you to all participants from the University of New Mexico. Station, we are now resuming operational audio communications.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Lock your Soyuz hatch and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
This show is made possible thanks to the generous support from the County of Bernalillo, burnco.gov, and thanks to listeners just like you.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. We'll be right back.
That was astronaut Commander Chris Hadfield, recorded on the International Space Station. Before the break, you heard an interview with Christina Cook, who's currently on the space station. This is the Children's Hour. We had the opportunity to visit with NASA's Astro Christina and more than 600 students in a show recorded at the University of New Mexico. We also had many space scientists with us at the show, including a biologist whose space science experiment is spicy. He's a guy from Española, grew up, born and raised in the state of New Mexico. And now he is a research scientist who is part of the team that will be growing New Mexico green chili in space. Please give a warm welcome to Jacob Torres.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it.
We have a lot of questions for you here. We're going to start right here with Octavia.
What are the challenges to growing plants in space?
You know, the biggest challenge to growing plants in space is the lack of gravity. Directing water to go into a specific direction without gravity is a big challenge. Plants have evolved to grow with the gravity constant, to guide their roots in the specific direction, and then make the sprout go in another direction. So the lack of gravity makes plants hard to grow.
How did you pick the type of chili for the space station?
Oh, that's an awesome question. It was a lot of fun. Now, we took cultivars from all around the world. We tried different peppers from everywhere. We put them in our environmental chambers. We simulated the International Space Station environment, turned the lights on, and essentially we let them play out, see which ones grew the best. And ultimately, the New Mexico peppers were the ones that handled our environment.
Can you describe what the advanced plant habitat looks like and how it works?
Sure. So the advanced plant habitat looks a lot like a refrigerator or an appliance. And the way it works is it uses technology, automation, and sensors to control the environment, like temperature, humidity, light intensity, the frequency of the lights. And then we use those sensors to record data like temperature and all those fun things where I can look at trend data and see how the plants behaved and all kinds of cool experiments. And the advanced plant habitat is very cool.
Since you're successful and can grow green chili on the space station, can the astronauts roast and eat it?
Sure. So I'm so glad that question was kind of asked Christina earlier, because that's a very difficult question. Can we roast the chili in space? It would be very hard, but fortunately, Christina, just like Christina said, they could wrap it in their little oven, and they would be able to roast it to a little point. But up right now, if they were to eat the peppers in space, they would eat it fresh.
Does what you're learning about growing plants in space have any application for growing plants on Earth?
That's an awesome question. Very good. There are many implications for space biology that apply to Earth. And there's a whole list of them that I can go through. But the one that came to my mind that really stood out was the way that space biology brings attention to horticulture and growing plants. And it brings this collegial environment of the universities throughout the nation and all these scientists to work together. And that's something that NASA does, is we bring people together to do great things. And that's really fun about it.
What kind of background do you have to be a scientist working on the International Space Station?
Sure. To be able to work on the International Space Station, you would have to be an astronaut, and that I have not done. But what I can answer is, what kind of background do you need to be able to work for NASA? Essentially, you have to be somebody who is passionate and loves what they do. NASA does many, many things, and there are room for all disciplines and all things that you've done in your life, and everything from lawyers to engineers like me and scientists and all those things. And so what you need to do is be passionate about what you believe in, take yourself to school, and then apply. If you if your name is not there, you won't get in. So when the time comes, make sure that you fill out the application and that your name is there in the hat when it's time to be chosen. That is the secret, really.
Jacob Torres, everybody. First person to grow green chili in space. Did you all know that Mars research is happening right here at the University of New Mexico? And students who are here can work in a super cool place called the Mars Science Laboratory. It's part of the Institute of Meteoritics and the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences. And our next guest is a research professor here at UNM in that field. He's one of the people who gets to drive the Mars rover. That's happening here at UNM. Please welcome to the stage Dr. Horton E. Newsom.
Hi. Hi. Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
We have some questions for you from our kids crew here.
Here's a question from Aiden Lee, a sixth grader. What is the newest thing that you're trying to explore or discover in space?
Oh, very cool. Okay, so on Mars, we're trying to understand how the evidence for water exists on Mars. You just saw a mud crack, so we saw beautiful evidence for that there was a lake there. And just last night, I was looking at all the pictures, and I think we've seen pictures of evidence that there used to be glaciers on Mars. So I'm gonna be looking more and more at these pictures, try to see if that's really the case or not. So very neat stuff, that would be ice.
And if there's glacier evidence on Mars, does that mean Mars, like planet Earth, has perhaps aquifers full of water? Can we tell?
Oh, yes. Absolutely, for sure.
You mean yes?
Yes, that's...
You mean yes, for sure, there's water underneath the surface?
Yes, for sure. We have evidence for lots of water. That's not a problem. But the water today... is except in the on the ice caps at the north and south pole of Mars is deeply buried. Although we've seen other evidence for ice from some of our missions.
We have two questions from kids from Pecos, New Mexico. Can asteroid mining affect Earth's climate? And
what experiments are you doing that could help any asteroid mining industries in the future?
Okay, well that's a neat question. So I'm in the Institute of Meteoritics. And we just celebrated our 75th anniversary. For 75 years, people here at the University of New Mexico have been studying meteorites. And meteorites come from asteroids. So that's how we know that there might be some types of materials that would be useful to mine from asteroids. So we have a lot of people studying them using all kinds of very fancy, extremely powerful microscopes and that sort of thing. So someone once asked, well, how do you study space? You have to have a giant telescope, right? Well, we have some of the world's most powerful microscopes that we use to study material from space.
And just briefly, what are some of the cool things you've found on asteroids and meteorites when they've come to the ground? Is there anything particularly unique about them minerally?
Well, we see, yes. In fact, you mentioned water before. Well, one of the things that scientists here at University of New Mexico have shown is that there's has been water on many asteroids. And we have rocks that have experienced an alteration from the presence of water. So that's a kind of a neat thing that we discovered here.
Dr. Horton Newsom, please give him a round of applause from UNM. Thank you so much for being with us today from the Mars Science Laboratory. Children's Hour is written and produced by me, Katie Stone, with lots of help this week from many, many people, among them David Hansen at the University of New Mexico Biology Department, who organized the entire NASA event. Hats off to you, Dr. Hansen. And thanks to Elisha Allen, Max Marquez, and the whole team over at UNM Tech Services. And many, many thanks to NASA STEM Engagement, as well as to astronaut Christina Cook. Production support was provided by Marty Adam Smith. Our photographers were Vanessa Vassar, Gary Newell, and Marissa Lucero's team at UNM Communications. Find a link to the video of the interview with Christina Cook on the ISS at our website, childrenshour.org. These videos are also posted to the website of NASA. NASA.gov is full of educational, entertaining videos on all kinds of topics in space. We're going to go out with something from the WALL-E soundtrack. This is Peter Gabriel.
Your feet had been bound by what gravity brings to the ground. Did you feel you were tricked?
The Children's Hour is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a nonprofit dedicated to producing high quality kids public radio. Learn more at childrenshour.org. Support for the Children's Hour provided by listeners just like you and by the County of Bernalillo, New Mexico, bernco.gov. Meow Wolf is a proud supporter of the Children's Hour. Meow Wolf creates immersive experiences that transport audiences of all ages into kaleidoscopic realms of story and exploration. MeowWolf.com. Support also provided by the Infinite Gesture Fund at the Albuquerque Community Foundation and by the Living Re Foundation. Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow. We'll be back next week for another edition of the Children's Hour.
Kids Public Radio!
I love the Children's Hour.